You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Broken records, the albums you wouldn't shut up about. Broken records, the music our guests can't live without.
Like Judy,
Barbara,
Liza,
Bette,
Betty,
Audra,
Bernadette.
We broadcast this podcast with hopes that someday we might get Patti LuPone.
Start.
Thought we'd mix it up for season two.
Okay, I'll be the top.
Come on. Welcome to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. I'm Ben Rimmelauer, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, two seasons and counting, Daniel Nolan.
Yes, hey y'all. Today's guest is the Tony-winning star of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
She'll be... I didn't write her name.
Well, they know who we're talking about.
John Cameron Mitchell.
Yes,
no, he didn't win a Tony for that. Mm. Sorry. Retake.
No, he did. He won that honorary one.
That's like Bernadette's dog, Tony. It doesn't count.
Or Bernadette's dog, Tony.
That counts. I'm having so much fun already. Who is today's guest?
Today's guest is Lena Hall.
Oh, yes. Lena will be chatting with us about Guns N' Roses' 1987 debut album, Appetite for Destruction.
Typical Broken Records fare.
More like, not Marilyn May.
Right. I mean, you know, Marilyn May has an appetite for destruction, just tearing up that stage. Oh, we're done. Okay.
That's all I wrote.
Okay, so That's all she sat down and wrote. Okay, so I haven't seen you in
a minute. I have so much time to talk about.
Okay,
so much.
Go on, go ahead.
Well, there's a new phase of the journey of Ben Rimmelauer that has occurred.
Okay.
I don't think I've told you about it. I am transitioning.
Okay, cool.
No. I don't think I mentioned this to you. I mean, I'm still deep in the Barbara Cook place.
Uh-oh.
But I have a new thing that I'm really, into, which sounds to the untrained ear like something I was already into.
Right.
But I'm really into MAME right now.
Even more so than usual.
Specifically anti-MAME.
Oh, the movie.
And
the book?
Well, I grew up,
I've never read the book.
I was born in Liverpool. I'd seen the movie with Roz Russell a couple times over the years, including recently.
Fab.
And always loved it. I'd seen the Lucy movie a couple of times.
Didn't love it.
Including recently, only if you include today, which would be part of our equation.
It's today.
Thank you. I've never seen the show.
No.
As Patty would say, I didn't even know what Roberta was about.
Has anyone seen the show? I mean, there's...
Max von Essen. But, no, he did, because he did it at the Kennedy Center with Christine Baranski and, Harriet Harris, and I know all these weird things about weird names. Emily Skinner was Gooch in that production. But Christine Ebersole in MAME, Paper Mill Playhouse, where our friend of the pod, Paul Iacono, played young Patrick, and her, Vera, this is not at all the point of the story, was Kelly Bishop. But when Michelle... Collins? No, what's her name? Michelle Lee did MAME at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yes.
You know who played Vera?
Who?
Christine Ebersole.
Oh!
And then, funny enough, at the Jerry Herman Kennedy Center Honors, Bosom Buddies was the two Christines, Baranski and Ebersole, two MAMEs.
Oh.
And yet,
wow.
If you ask me, it was two Veras.
It sure was two Veras.
But, I mean, I've been quite opinionated on the casting of potential MAMEs, considering, well, even for me, I mean, it's been a subject that I feel I could say a lot about, and basically what I've had to say is that nobody can
do
play
it.
MAME.
Yeah.
I mean, if Donna Murphy's listening, I always say that she could do it.
Right.
And I basically mean that, and I'd certainly rather see her do it than any of her friends. But I really don't think that there's anyone that's right. Or that's been my historic opinion. But what happened was I had, I have now read the novel Anti-MAME, and I'm now in the middle of the sequel, which I didn't even know existed.
Oh my goodness. It's like the Oz books.
Totally. And then I also started a biography of Patrick Dennis, which was actually not his real name. But that I just got in the mail. That is beautiful. A book about the charting the history of just MAME as a thing.
Oh, fabulous.
But I'm so deep into it. And what I really want to do, actually, the stories in the book are so episodic. I really think it should be a TV series. And I really think Rachel Schuchert should create it and hire me to
Do not let Ryan Murphy get his hands on that.
Well, if he'll get it done. You know what? No. It's like the Mike Bloomberg of MAME.
Someone else.
better him than Donald Trump doing MAME. But I've been obsessed with MAME. And, I mean, the thing, first of all, is that I realized, because I think I was thinking about potential MAME casting.
Mm-hmm. As we all have been.
And I kept thinking, like, why is everybody so goddamn wrong? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't it be Patty? What is so wrong? Like, you know, are the people that said Patty couldn't do it, they're allowed to say that because Patty's, like, a cis-ish gendered white woman. And, like, but, like, if they had those same kinds of reasons for why, like, Audra McDonald couldn't play Mama Rose or something, it'd be, like, is the people that say Patty can't play MAME because she's, like, too ethnic? Like, what is that based on? Or is that because, like, you know, they think she actually doesn't have the talent? And,
no.
And this is aside from the whole age question, you know. But,
I mean, for me, it's, like, Patty is just not warm enough.
Well, see, I actually think that's not true, but that's a reasonable answer to have about her. I actually think that she has the right warmth for MAME. I still don't necessarily think she's right for MAME, but I actually think that her warmth, I think the kind of warmth Patty has, which is not like the kind of warmth Bernadette has, but I don't think Bernadette has the MAME warmth, because I don't think Bernadette as a mother.
Right.
She can be a mother who's like, get out there and sing the song,
Or
she can be a mother who like fucks your boyfriend.
Yeah.
But Bernadette's not a mother who like rubs your head. Like Bernadette's warmth is vaginal in terms of like having sex with it. It's not like you didn't come through that canal.
She has a wet warmth.
but it's romantic and sexual. It's not maternal, you know?
Right.
Whereas I think Patty actually does have maternal warmth. She just doesn't have it for people who messed up a light cue or something, you know,
took a photo.
But anyway, but this wasn't about Patty, just contrary to no matter how many of you want it to be.
Yeah.
But the thing I realized is, because I was like, what is this all based on? Like, this idea of Angela Lansbury, like, honestly, what, if I defined MAME by all the reasons people said Patty was wrong or so-and-so was wrong
Angela as a standard.
Yeah, but it doesn't, the person that's left when I cross off all the things that people say are wrong about Patty or wrong about Bernadette or wrong about whoever, what I'm left with is not Angela Lansbury, you know, and I couldn't figure out, I still don't have any sense what Angela was like. I mean, you can watch these videos of her doing the numbers and stuff.
Right, right.
But it doesn't really, what Angela does in the numbers, Patty and Bernadette and Bette and everybody could do too. You know, so, or maybe they couldn't, but I mean, they're in that same vibe, you know?
Right.
And what I realized watching it though, and I still have no idea what Angela was like, and I'm taking it on good authority that she was amazing.
Right.
But watching, going back to the Roz Russell movie, and I have to say, reading the book, all I see is Roz. All I see is Roz.
Forever.
Thank you.
All we see is
Roz. I mean, it's like when I read Gone with the Wind and I just kept picturing Vivian Leigh. It's like, it's Roz.
So that.
And the book, obviously, I mean, that's not the play. And like, so I was just like, who is the Roz Russell? And part of it is that nobody does that thing that she did so well of like, you know, you ask me a question, like you, like we know, they'll say to her, like, they're going on about their cheesy house, the Upsons, and she's like, they're like, isn't the house something? And she's like, you know, it's something.
You know,
that thing where you're insulting the person, but they don't get it. Like,
that's not
a thing that, like, I don't know who's good at that. You know, drag queens, I guess. I mean, the closest I could come up with was Justin Bond, you know? Maybe that'll be our next canceled Joe's Pub concert. But, but I don't know, I don't know who can do it, but I'm really feeling like Roz is amazing, and, and that's why I tweeted this thing, because I was like, I feel like karmically, like, MAME being adapted as a musical with Angela and not with Roz was Roz's punishment for taking Gypsy from Merman.
Oh.
Like, Merman should have done the movie of Gypsy.
Sure.
And Roz, like, in a way, maybe not quality-wise, maybe Angela was better than Roz would have been, but certainly, like, if you're Roz, you should have done the musical of Mame. But I guess, but then I found out that she was offered it and didn't want it. I'm going to find out in that book.
Yeah. So we'll follow up on the next episode.
But I'm just like, I don't know. I just don't think of Angela Lansbury as being that, like, yeah,
Here's the thing.
And also, I've been going deep down the cast album now of Mame and everything, and, like, you know I love Angela, but, like, I don't know, the complaint people say of what's wrong with Dear World, I think it might be wrong with Mame.
Which, like, is?
I love Hello Dolly, and the cast album of Mame feels a lot like Hello Dolly, and that feels very wrong for anti-Mame.
What is
that? Like, I feel like somebody, like, cunty should have written Mame, not somebody that's like, the good old-fashioned show tune is alive and well. I don't know if the Mame wanted the good old-fashioned American show tune.
The tone is off.
I don't know. I have no place to say that. Anyone that ever listened to this podcast.
People are going
to
write us.
I've never seen Mame. I really don't know what I'm talking about. But I'm just saying, my questions, this is what I'm hoping to explore as I embark on this new journey of my life into Mame, is... The Hello Dolly-ness of the Mame cast album strikes me as wrong for the Mame that I'm reading in the book and watching in the movie with Roz.
Well, I mean, you know,
the mirror's it, like, hot as balls in here.
It's really hot.
I should open the window or it'll be too loud.
Yeah, open the window. In a second.
I should open a new window.
Open a new window, honey. the Mame score.
If I take off my underwear,
I'll put my hand in there. You know, it's so joyous, and it's today, and we need a little Christmas. It's like all these songs about just being joyful and being in the moment. So I think he probably did take liberties and kind of skew it to his own worldview.
I don't know. I feel like those things are the worldview of her. I feel like I'm more wishing it was Sondheim who'd written it. Mm. Not for the worldview, but for the, like, it feels like so, like, call
Dolly.
Like, and it feels like It's Today, like, is not in the, like, she sings It's Today, like, to the audience to be like, this is what I'm all about.
Well,
it's, like, not to Patrick, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel... Like, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
But I mean, think about, like someone like Marilyn. It's, like, Marilyn May, because I just saw her sing that at the Jerry Herman Memorial.
Yes.
You know, she's someone who has a great warmth and connection with the audience, but she's also salty AF.
Yes.
And she's very smart and stylish.
Yes.
And always,
I would love to see her as Mame.
Right. Always the life of the party, always holding court, but also, like... No nonsense, but very giving. You know, that's someone who I think, and she says, I've heard her say in interviews that she thinks Angela Lansbury, she would want Angela to play her in a movie of her life.
I'm also biased because Angela's performance was not Mame-like at all in A Little Night Music.
Well, that's different. I mean, that's such a different character.
Yeah, but, like, she didn't...
It's funny to say that, though, because...
Roz Russell wouldn't have played Madame Armfelt like the sweet old baddie lady that Angela played.
Right. And then when you saw Elaine Stritch, you really, really...
Well, Elaine played it like that sweet old lady's truck driver. You know, like, it's supposed to be someone, like, you know, like, I mean...
A little more...
Sophisticated, you know.
Well, and the way, so...
Or at least bitchy in a way that's based on the wit and the words. Elaine is a little bit bitchy, kind of just based on being, like angry and domineering.
Right.
And Angela just, like, wasn't bitchy.
Well, and so Angela, the thing I always think about, even though we have never seen Angela do Mame, I mean, we have those weird, like, silent recordings or whatever, but I've watched so much Murder, She Wrote, and I feel like in that show, her character is very savvy and very, you know, she has, like, 1,000 nieces and nephews who are constantly introduced. And she's, like, a very, like, giving, warm... You know, everyone loves her, Jessica Fletcher, and they can depend on her. But she's also, like, the life of the party, going on book tours. And that was how... They originally wrote her as, like, a Miss Marple type. Like, old and, like, you know, dowdy and weird. And she was like, no, I want Jessica to be more sophisticated. I want her to be friends with men as well as women. I want her to be stylish. Mm. I want her to be independent. I want her to be a hostess, you know, having people over to the house and, you know, visiting these crazy resorts with her friends. And so that's what I always think of when I think of her Mame.
Do you know who I think of as being more Roz Russell-ish?
Who?
B. Arthur.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. B is way more Roz-ish than Angela is.
Also, funny enough, because I happened to watch the Lucy May movie today.
Mm-hmm.
And
by accident.
I hadn't seen it in years. Yeah. And B gets an It's Today reprise, just like a little short one in the end. I tried so hard to find a way to grab it from online to post it, but I couldn't. But
where'd you watch it?
On Apple TV.
Oh. I need to pay for it. I've never purchased it. Oh, you've purchased
yes,
it?
Oh, yes. All the memes. But, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, come for Angela. Like, I take
no,
it on...
This is,
I do
this
take
is a
it
good
on,
conversation
I do
have,
take
though.
It on good faith that she was as amazing as they say. And honestly, I mean, obviously, I love It's Today, and I love Bosom Buddies, and I love If You Walked Into My Life, and...
It's also a conversation about...
It's my laundry. It's my real pimp. Hello? You better pause it. Hi, are you here?
Okay.
So where were we? You were saying that you hate Angela Lansbury and Jerry Herman. I was like, no, come on. Like, they're really good. You should show some respect for, like, classic musical theater. And you were just like, I'm a millennial. Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders. Ooh, Bernie is name. It's today.
No, Bernie is so the Elaine stretch. I think
totally.
I made that
yeah,
very
yeah.
clear.
But no, it's an interesting thing to think about who originates a role, right? Because it's like,
yeah.
Is that the standard? I mean, especially if it's a good, you know, award-winning performance. It's like, is that the standard then? Or is it not? Because, you know, it's like with Mama Rose, it's like Ethel Merman originated the role, but she's not everyone's favorite. And a lot of people say that subsequent performers were much better than
the
she
thing
was.
About Merman, though, is like...
But
she's
still considered the gold standard.
But also because Gypsy is such... so regarded as, like, a great piece of writing that
mm-hmm.
really stands on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And relatively early. I mean, if Merman was 59 and Angela was, like, 73, I think,
mm-hmm.
in London.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was 74. But, like, it was Arthur Lawrence directing and Sondheim and everybody was still very involved. Like, and Angela was such a different choice
mm-hmm.
that I feel like they immediately, like, were saying, okay, there's another way to go. And then... That forever after that, it was already established that there was at least two different kinds of roses that were acceptable, you know, and then we kept expanding it and it kept working. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Ty and Daly, I'm sure people thought that was a crazy choice, and then it was so successful,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, I mean, Bernadette, it's very, like, Hillary and Bernie in a way, because it's like, well, it's just, if they had let Patty play Rose first,
uh-huh.
like she had the God-given right to do,
right, sure.
then we wouldn't have been so angry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they could have said, now let's do something really interesting and different. I would have been the first to be like, you know what? Bernadette is actually better,
mm-hmm.
because I would have been safe to.
Mm.
Patty would have been directed by Sam Mendes in an interesting, innovative production, and she would have won a Tony,
mm-hmm.
and she would have still been a little younger, and it would have been what it should have been.
Yeah.
And that, but of course, the line from Gypsy is, if it could have been, it would have been, if I could have been.
So are you saying
Bernadette should have replaced Patty in 2003 instead of Bernadette doing it being, I think the onus was on Bernadette to prove why it wasn't Patty, and a lot of people felt she got there, but you had people like me who were so angry. Why was I so angry at a revival? You know, when people revive something in a different way, I'm not usually angry, well, I usually but like...
Well, so are you saying Bernadette's the Hillary?
I don't even know what, it doesn't really line up. No, I'm really saying Patty's the Hillary, because like, I feel like I'm the angry Bernie voter who was like, I couldn't get behind Bernadette's Gypsy.
Mm.
But if they'd let me have Patty first, I would have been more supportive.
So
I wasn't mad at Bernadette ever playing Rose. It just
right.
pissed me off that she was getting, quote-unquote, the Broadway revival, and Patty
right,
wasn't.
Right,
if I'd had a crystal ball, it would have been different.
Yeah, but then Patty, you know.
So Gypsy was established mm-hmm. as something. But I think MAME... I don't know. Honestly, MAME is like a fucking mystery. Because,
right.
like... We can all really understand the problems with reviving Funny Girl. I mean,
sure,
there may be problems
yeah.
as far as how the show is or not, but a problem that's very understandable is that Barbara Streisand was a singular talent
right.
that's hard to replace.
And she
and that,
is that character.
And we've so, I mean, Fanny Bryce may have been a person that meant something to people in the 60s when Barbara mm-hmm. did Funny Girl, mm-hmm. but to generations that came later, they're right. inextricable. Mm-hmm. Is that the word? Inextricably linked.
Yeah.
And so it really just feels like it's Barbara's and anybody else is just, you know, and I think I've told you I saw that Actors Fund concert in 2002 with
right.
Cara Lee yeah. and Bebe and Sutton and Kristen mm-hmm. and Adina and... Anna Gasteyer and Judy Kuhn
and Whoopi Goldberg. Same people.
Julia Murney. Yes. I mean, literally everybody was in it. Lilius. And they were, some of them, Lilius White gave like the greatest Orion in My Parade. You know, some of them were amazing in ways that others of them didn't reach, but they mm-hmm. were all really incredible. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was stunning was that not one of them, even the best ones, which I would say were Lilia starring in My Parade, mm-hmm. oddly, Julia People, wouldn't yeah. have expected that, both because I don't think anybody could touch that song, but Julia really did.
Right.
And let's even just say those two were the greatest. Uh-huh. But, you know, Cara Lee was also really, really amazing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were. But that, as even the greatest people in that, Lilius might have been able to do Don't Rain on My Parade as well as Barbara.
Right.
But she couldn't do the rest of those songs as well as Barbara. Same mm. thing with Cara Lee. Same thing with Julia. None of the... It was staggering to think that while each of those people at their best maybe did one song as well as Barbara could, mm-hmm. they couldn't have done them all. And so there's a talent issue. Talent's not even a fair word, because obviously Lilius and Cara Lee and stuff are incredibly talented, but Barbara Streisand is a once-in-a-generation talent. So that's yeah. in the way. But I don't think you can say that Angela's talent in MAME, talent-wise, singing yeah. and acting or dancing, was right. what's irreplaceable.
Yeah.
So it's this whole weird thing about style, and I think when they talk about the style, like, they seem to put a lot of pressure on Patty wouldn't look good in those costumes or whatever, you know?
Yeah, the style is a big part of it, because, you know, she's so tall and the short hair and the big lashes and...
Okay, so style is an issue. I mean, I even honestly thought watching Lucy MAME today, having recently watched Roz, mm-hmm. I was like, Lucy doesn't look as right in these clothes.
Right.
And obviously this movie was done badly in casting Lucy first and foremost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then I'm like, wasn't Lucille Ball actually like really tall and glamorous?
She was.
So like, but I mean, she was older then, but yeah. she was still pretty thin. Like, I don't know why she couldn't, like, but I was like, fuck, if Lucille Ball... on film with a lot of money, mm-hmm. couldn't look good enough in these costumes.
Right.
How the hell do I think Donna Murphy or Anna Gasteyer or Megan Mullally is Connie going Collette. To... Any of these bitches are not going to, you know...
Yeah, that's why I think the new production, the new revival, will have to be a new... I mean, at least visual take on things. You know, I think we talked one time about, like, what if MAME had, like... Like short gray hair, you know, or like a...
Yeah, but the hair is one thing. That's the individual style.
Right.
But what is clear is that she has to be like a fashion plate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's sure. not like looking fabulous when you play, you know, Desiree in A Little Night Music. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. those women tend to be beautiful, but like you could cast somebody, you know, Patty made for a blousier Desiree when she played it, but you cinched her and shoved her and, you know, she looked good in the costumes because... Desiree's an actress, but mm-hmm. she's not supposed... But someone that's, like, the toast of, like, you know, the yeah. Upper East Side... Not the Upper East Side, because she's more cool, but... You know, Beekman Place, and just... I mean, she's supposed to be, like... I mean, there's a whole... Society. There's whole things in the book when mm-hmm. fashion designers go crazy over her mm-hmm. and want her to wear their stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's a clothes horse anyway and spends all this money. And
I
like,
mean, what about... What if it was just, like, a... It's so hard nowadays to do this, but what if it was just, like, a new... Discovery, like a new star, you know, that the show was built.
Well, sure, okay, new... but like, so that is then the assignment of the people who are producing it, but right. that ends the conversation of
right.
casting it,
right?
But I also feel like that's fine, and I don't want to do it. Like the whole point, like the fun of MAME is
sure.
like
the guessing, you know, and casting, and
plus you want it to be a hit and run, and then you want to bring in the stars,
right?
You know, so I don't know what I have really nothing.
Well, but I'm so interested for you to read this book and then let me read it because I didn't even know that existed. It's called But Darling, I'm Your Auntie MAME, The Amazing History of the World's Favorite Madcap Aunt.
and I mean, I do keep coming back to Patty in a way now that I didn't before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also keep coming back to, like, I don't think she would look in these costumes. But then I feel like if I was woke, if I was, like, casting West Side Story with people, like, in wheelchairs and stuff, like, wouldn't I think, like, Patty doesn't need to be, like, skinny and tall to, like, play Mame?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's a way of, I don't know how to say this nicely, like, there's a way of making Patty look fabulous. You know, it's like...
As Desiree, but I don't know if you can as Mame.
I mean...
Like, because here's the thing. What does it basically mean to look fabulous, right? It means two things, to be rich and to be skinny.
Yeah, but
preferably skinny and tall. You're welcome.
Thank you.
But, like, I mean, that's what you want. Like, I mean, I see it with, like, my friend who is, like, really fabulous and, like, spends a lot of money on clothes. And, like, you know, now she has kids, so it's, like, a little more, like, slowed down. But, like, she would, like, throw parties and, like, shop for the look and get her hair and shit done. And, like, she would look like a zillion dollars and all the gay boys would freak out over what she wore. But it was because she was thin and she spent the money, you know?
But I'm thinking about, like, you know, Karen Walker. I mean, Megan Mullally has a good body, but she's... I mean, this is... I don't want to get into this territory, but...
I mean, it's funny you bring up Megan's body, though, because I always thought of her in TV terms as, like, the funny fat one on the show.
Right.
And then when I met Megan Mullally, I was like, she's the skinniest person I've ever seen.
She's very thin, but the way Karen is dressed and the way they make her... She's not, like, this... you know, tall, svelte, you know, clothes horse. I mean, she wears, like,
Donna,
you know,
Murphy
black
in Anyone Can Whistle, and I've seen Patti LuPone in Anyone Can Whistle, and their costumes weren't that different, and Donna looked a lot better.
But don't you think, like, if they dressed Patti kind of like they dressed Karen Walker?
In fairness, I'll say the costumes in Sunset Boulevard were designed for Patty, and I don't think anyone else ever looked as perfect in them. You know, the way that little black suit that she wears and as if we never said goodbye, the way that pencil skirt flared down, but there was, like, a little bit of the jacket was cinched at the waist and then flared at the hip before that. That was so flattering and perfection on Patty that she looked like a movie star. And to me, everybody else, the proportions always looked wrong in those costumes, which is why I thought it was weird that Glenn prized those so much that in the revival she wore the Anthony Powell costumes again. I mean, obviously, Glenn looks good in clothes, so it wasn't like a tragedy. But I did think those really looked best on Patty. So maybe there is a way to design... It's not about Patty. I mean, they all are too old.
What about Glenn as Mame?
No, well, if Patty's too old, Glenn is 2 years too much older. But, the first thing I think we want is someone that can actually sing it, you know?
But I think Glenn could sing it.
No, absolutely not. Hell no. No, I mean, the truth is, like, I'm torn because, you know, let's say my dream revival of Mame won Patty a Tony and ran for 5 years and I got to see Bernadette and Donna and every other bitch that
Kristen,
I wanted to see do it. Like...
Okay.
Well, Kristen, but the fact is most of them would not be able to sing it. Like, Donna could, but it's a lot harder to sing than Dolly.
It is harder to sing than Dolly.
You can get away in Dolly with the bullshit that Bernadette pulled. You can go there and you can be like, before the parade passes by, I'm gonna go and taste Saturday's high life.
I like how Bernadette has a speech.
I don't know. It's not even Bernadette. It's all these bitches. They all did it, you know?
Right, right.
Like, and Bette and everybody. And
but
you can't do that in Mame. And I realized it watching Lucy, too. Mm-hmm. Because Lucy is like, light the... No, you wish she were.
Yeah.
It's not. She's more like, light the candles.
Yeah.
Get the ice out.
Yeah.
Heck, roll the rug up. It's today. It's not... You want... Notes. Hold the notes.
Yeah.
And you want them to do it not in that Glenn Close way that's like, light the candles, it's today. It can't be like a choir boy who's got one job or he's going to drop dead is to hold the note. It's got to be Marilyn May coming out and telling the piano player to play faster.
Right, right.
And sauntering over there and realizing she almost tripped over that microphone cord and winking
at
the other guy. I mean, it's got to be easy and breezy.
Yeah, a machine, honey. Yeah, and, like, a song like...
I'm all over the place.
A song like If You Walked Into My Life is a lot different than Before the Parade Passes By. You know, that's, like, a belty song. It's, I mean, it's
a
more
power
like
ballad.
A ballad. Yeah,
yeah,
power ballad, for sure.
There's nothing in Dolly that's like that.
For sure. And, okay, so just while we're wrapping up, before we get to Lena, what are your... just?
I need another hour on this.
Just, like, lightning round, like, top three Mame choices.
Well, I've been saying it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
that I think Anna Gasteyer would be a fabulous name. Mm-hmm. Because I think that I've seen her. She was in my friend David Brin's film Dare, and she played one of the teenage characters' mothers. And she was so... She had so much warmth. And when she was in the scene with the other kid, the guy from Friday Night Lights, who was like the more troubled teenager, who was not her son, and they were in the car together and he was opening up to her. And the way she was warm to him, it reminds me of the beginning of Mame when when he describes the first crazy scene and it's so scary and little Patrick doesn't know what's hit him.
Yeah.
But then Mame is like, "I'm your Auntie Mame, darling," and she hugs him, and he and it's like, and he knew that he was going to be all right.
Yeah,
and like it's so, you know, and I think she has that. And while I never got really into the whole thing with her and Wicked and everything, but like her on that New Brain album is even better than Penny Fuller. I think she really belts those, and that's in the vibe of Mame for me. I mean, I'm sure Bill Finn's. Muse in a, you know, I mean, the way Judy Garland was to Jerry Herman writing Mame, I'm sure Bill Finn's writing the mother in New Brain was Mame. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's very right on. So I would love to see that.
Anna.
I don't know. I still do really want to see Patty do it. I think she has the warmth. I think people that don't think she has it would be surprised. I don't think that they would... I don't think it would be something we agreed to disagree on. I think that I would prove them wrong. Me! And I think she would sing it better than truly anyone.
Oh, she would sing it really well. Really
well. And I don't know. Like, I mean, the only other... Like, I'd heard Jane Krakowski, and I was starting to, like, get myself psyched up for that. Like, I'm not sure if I've gotten all the way there, but, like... But I could maybe see getting there. I do really like her. And you know, I mean, people say Kristen, and I'm so not into that concept of it. But Kristen has surprised me before. I mean, honestly, like, this. Part of the reason I was so happy to start thinking about Mame as a TV series was because I was thinking about who you would cast then. And in a way, it's easier to cast it as a TV series. Because... The stars you would want for a TV series are stars who would want to do a TV series. Whereas you're in this conundrum casting a thing on Broadway where it has to be like a star.
Yeah,
but like, what? There's no stars on Broadway, you know?
Right.
And like, and then of course you have to have someone that can sing it, which really eliminates most people. Whereas you don't have that because like on TV, I was like, maybe Sarah Jessica Parker could do it. You know, I know people love to get all bitchy about her, but like, I don't know. I've always loved her, and like, you know. To me, she's someone who has that equivalent of she's both New York chic, but she's also bohemian, you know?
I mean, she would bring an interesting, she is chic, but it's like a specific, like, Carrie Bradshaw association of chic. And
Carrie Bradshaw, but yeah, but you also, like, Carrie Bradshaw's not just, like, the Pat Field stuff. I mean, it's like... I mean, you designer, see Sarah Jessica Parker, like, walking at the opening of the season at the Metropolitan Opera, you know, and she's,
I just
like...
I don't think Sarah Jessica's that good of an actress.
Well, okay, so that's another story, but...
But, I mean, I'm really... I would love to see Megan Mullally as Mame, because she's a music theater actress. She started
in music theater. Music theater.
Musical theater.
No, I love when you say music theater.
I don't know why you say that. I was just thinking about that yesterday.
Well, there was a big thing, like, in the 90s during, like... Jason Robert Brown, not even so much Jason Robert Brown, more like Michael John Lacusa and Adam Gettle. It's very light in the piazza. Where like music theater was like the opposite of musical comedy.
I think in college that's what they called it. That's why
it's,
I say that.
I find it a little pretentious, but now when you say it, it's not pretentious. When you say it, it just feels like smart.
I mean,
here's my beef with Megan.
Okay.
I obviously love Megan.
Yeah.
But, and I live for Karen, you know, but. Whenever I see Megan sing, and it's a little bit my beef with Jane Krakowski, although it's way worse with Megan, in my opinion. I mean, I believe Megan could sing anything and sing it thrillingly, but it never sounds like it's her. Like, it doesn't sound like she really means it. I feel like she's doing, like, a character
voice. Did you see her sing The Man That Got Away on Will and Grace?
Yes, and I was not into it.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, I thought it was so good.
I mean, if that's what we're going for, then just give me Kristen. I'd be happy with Kristen. I'd much rather
I would love Kristen, but I mean, that would be a much different production. I mean,
Staircase will be into the kiddie pool.
I mean, if that was the case, I want them to set it at, like, I want the setting to be, like,
Dollywood.
Like a ranch house, like, you know, the Circle K Ranch in
I mean,
Lubbock,
that's the
Texas.
Thing, it's so, like, culturally, like, linked. I mean, all the stuff, you know, with, like, the prejudice wasp people in the end. I mean, it's really set in its
Well, I mean, place. And it does need to be, like, a Yankee, you know, and Kristen is not that.
She's not that, you know. And she's not somebody that you feel like could play that. Like, when we say she's not that, it's not about, like...
It's today, y'all.
It's not like, I know where she was born, I don't buy it. Right, it's like, no, she actually, like, seems pretty incapable of being
just, like,
that way.
Take a quick scroll through her Insta.
I mean, she's more Dolly... What's her name? Sally Cato than Mame.
Sure. Anyway, with that said, though, when I saw her at Jerry Herman, she sang...
If you
walked into my life.
Do we have time? Do we have to save that for next time?
We'll save that for the next episode, because we've talked so much on this one. But I will just say about Kristen is that she sang a very unique version of If You Walked Into My Life. It was very, just like her presence seemed very Dolly Parton to me, and we'll put a pin in that.
By the way, I would like to see Kristen and Dolly Parton play Dolly Levi.
Oh, for sure.
But not Mame.
Yeah. Okay, so without further ado, let's talk to...
Who's the guest?
Lena Hall!
Oh, wow. Listen, we'll talk as long as Lena...
Honey, I can go for 2.5 hours, we know this. Even without alcohol.
You don't need it, baby.
Yeah, no, I don't. Okay.
Well, we're so excited to have you here, Lena. I'm such a huge fan. And I was telling them that I actually started getting a little choked up reading your Wikipedia page. So crazy.
Why?
Because, you were talking about when you had first made your name Lena Hall, and it was like a separate identity as a singer from Selena Carvajal, which you'd been working already on Broadway for years under. And then when you wanted to bring them together, and that you found out that Carvajal was actually a stage name that your, I guess, ancestors had taken on. And in whatever was quoted on your Wikipedia page, it's like, and I knew that my ancestors would be okay with that. And I don't know why I'm sitting there on the train, and I was like, it's so sweet. And then I was like, this might not even be real. This could be some like blog post that got like transposed.
So 7 generations back, my family's name originally is Garcia, which isn't even that bad, but this is in the Philippines, and Carvajal is like, apparently it's like Smith, you know what I mean? It's a much more used name, and it's prettier, so they felt, and it means Valley of Oak Trees. So
beautiful.
Yeah, so they took the stage name. He did back in the day, and then now we've just had it for so long that it was like, oh, this is our last name. In fact, we even tried to do a genealogy back because we thought that our family had been Jewish, and during the Spanish Inquisition had all been changed over to Catholicism and all that kind of stuff, but it turns out that's not true because our real last name isn't Carvajal, it's Garcia. So there's all this wild, you know, ancestry for my family. I mean, my family in the Philippines is like the whole lineage back is all artists.
Amazing.
All artists, wow. Yeah. From my dad's side, it's just...
And both your parents are dancers, right?
Yeah, my mom was his prima ballerina. She was his muse for his ballet company.
And
not well.
So, I mean, that you need to, like, write a book about your childhood, I'm sure.
Totally. Or show.
But you were a dancer, but you went straight to musical theater. One of the things I am obsessed with about you is that you were a member of the Young People's Teen Musical Theater Company in the Bay Area. Well, I went to school in the Bay Area, so I knew people that had gone. But, of course, you're their pride and glory, Tony Award-winning star. Amazing.
Nice.
But I couldn't believe that this I didn't know. I mean, I guess I first became aware of you, like, on, like, the Legally Blonde casting reality show. Amazing.
As everyone else did.
But you were, like, a Broadway veteran way already then. I mean, so I don't even know Daniel and I haven't talked about it. I was, like, learning that you went straight from high school into the national tour of Cats.
Yes, yeah.
Then into Cats on Broadway.
Yes.
Then 42nd Street on Broadway. Or first, Annie, Get Your Gun.
I did the tour of Annie, Get Your Gun first, yeah. Then I did 42nd Street. I was in, I don't know if you've you've ever heard of Radiant Baby.
I saw Radiant Baby.
At Public, I did that before
that
with
show.
Billy Porter.
That was Daniel Reichert played Keith Haring.
It was,
and
Billy
wow.
Porter was in
I didn't
it.
Know that.
Wow. By Deb Barsha.
It was way before
Very
its time,
cool.
unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was
that
just
show
the
has
wrong
to come back.
Time for that mm-hmm. show. So we did that, and then I did 42nd Street and Dracula, the musical, and Tarzan.
I mean, yes, Tarzan. You've come to be this, like, very cool, like, respected actor and, like, you know, and a wonderful musical theater singer with, like, I mean, I wasn't surprised at all that the album you want to talk about was Guns N' Roses because you have such a rock and roll voice. I mean, mm-hmm. so many people on Broadway have a rock intention or a little bit of like an overlap or at least want to or like rock and roll, you know. Mm. But I mean, you really have a fusion of those things. I mean, I listened to Guns N' Roses preparing for this and I was like, oh, Lena's voice has always reminded me of this. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Paradise City, I was like, this is so Lena, I can't take it. But you started out in these, like, show business, like, I mean, just Cats on tour, replacement, like, you know, in 42nd Street, and Annie Get Your Gun with Mary Lou Henner and Crystal Bernard.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, just really just, like, you paid your dues. And what was that like to be 18, 19 years old? Just, like, I mean, you saw all sides of this mm-hmm. business.
I did. And you know, it was... I didn't really know what I was doing because I had no mind for business, you know, mm-hmm. like the business side of things, especially at the beginning of my career. I was basically just going where the wind blew me. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I got this job offer. I am going to take it because mm-hmm. I have, it's not like I'm making decisions right now. You know, I'm just mm-hmm. trying to build a resume, which is a lot of what we do when we're younger.
Did you come to New York and then get Cats or were you still mm-hmm. back in the Bay Area?
I had just graduated high school. I was 17 years old, and I was working at a kid's store on Haight-Ashbury, and I was going to go to community college, but I didn't really want to go to college, per se, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the whole thing, is when I started my career, I was just kind of going where the wind blew. And my friend, Noah Hayden, who's also in Young People's Teen Musical Theater Company, he called me frantically one morning and was like, you have to go. They're having an open call for Cats. The women are at 2:00 today, so you got to get down here. And he had just gone through the men's call, and it was like, I don't know, like 11 or 12 p.m. So I just put my hair in pigtails and ran down to the audition just at 17 years old. And so it was from doing Young People's that I knew how to like audition for things. And I had a mm-hmm. book, which was ridiculous. And I talked all about that. I did a show called The Art of the Audition where I talked about how when I was young, my song choices were absurd for me to sing. Like,
do you remember what you sang at that audition?
Oh, for sure. I sang Dance 10 Looks 3.
Oh, yes.
I like flat-chested this girl who looks like she's 12 years old, right? And I thought I looked like an adult, but I look like a baby. And then I sang Asleep and Be, which is a Harold Arlen
yeah,
song,
yes.
but that's a Jamaican show.
Wow. You're not the first non-Jamaican lady to,
right.
to yeah, appropriate
right.
that song.
Right, yeah. I mean, I heard Barbara Streisand
sure.
do it, right?
Yeah.
And then another one, which was a genius pick, was Losing My Mind from Bob.
Oh,
you know? Because
you got it.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
17 years old.
Yeah, they're like, can we see your book? You know, and it was just like all these ridiculous
But
songs.
They wanted to keep hearing stuff.
They wanted to keep hearing stuff. I had nailed that audition. But
and which part were you in Cats?
Well, I started as a swing, so I did four roles.
I mean,
that
that's
my
baptism
first
by fire.
Job, yeah.
Like, truly.
And then my first time on as Demeter, the girl who mm-hmm. she gave her notice pretty soon after, so they had all seen me play the role, and then when she gave her notice, they moved me into the role. So on tour, I went from swinging four people for 2 months to being on stage.
And she's like the sexy, like McCavity girl, right?
She's the skittish one. So there's there's Bomb Ballerino, and then there's mm-hmm. Demeter. I think they combined them for the movie.
Taylor Swift?
No, not Taylor.
Wait, yeah, I think Taylor Swift played Bomb Demeter. Like
she's saying McCavity.
I haven't seen. Yeah,
yeah,
I haven't seen it, but it looks to me from the trailers that they had combined it.
Well, I saw it and I still didn't.
You saw
know,
it,
so apparently it's. Not,
I mean,
it was
such a trip. Who knows? But
anyway, so yeah. So then a year later, they transferred me to Broadway.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. Suf's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So it wasn't even like, I'd never put my name in the hat. I'd never put...
How were you such, how did you have so little direction about it when you clearly had this, like, huge burgeoning talent and, like, all this experience that you didn't... Why weren't you, like, planning something like that already?
I guess just kind of naivete, a bit of that. It's like when you don't know anything, you're kind of more fearless because mm-hmm. you just don't even know. You're going
when you graduated high school, like, why weren't you like, I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to do that? Like,
because I didn't know. Like, mm-hmm.
You didn't know what you wanted.
I had never been to New York before. My sister, she was supposed to be the musical theater talent of the family. My sister has an incredible voice no one knows about. She's unbelievably talented, but things didn't work out for her in that it was harder for her to deal with rejection. And, you know, for me, it's like I felt like rejection was like a dare. You know, like, we're going to say no, and I'm going to be like, I'm going to play this role or not, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to, like, prove you wrong, right? That's how I've always been. Mm. Maybe it's a younger sibling thing, or I'm not quite sure, but whatever our differences was in personality-wise, for me, I could handle the rejection. Again, I don't know if it's naivete or if it was just being totally headstrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that New York was the place to be. And I also didn't know, not until I came here for the first time. I was on tour with Cats when I came here for the very first time. And I was like, wow. I remember I walked off the train in Midtown right in front of the Mothership, Winter Garden Theater, where
yeah,
Cats was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wow, you know? And that was the first taste I got in New York. And it wasn't on my mind that I would move here. I was just like enjoying, I guess, my job and the time that
that's
I had.
When they moved you into the Broadway company.
They moved me later. I think it was 5 months later. Yeah. So it wasn't like,
but I mean,
I was,
how
like,
are you at like the company? That's what they call the musical theater company. I'm such like a fangirl for the company. How are you like in the company not knowing more? Like, I mean, the person I went to school with who was there was Amir Talai.
God, I love Amir.
But he was like a barracuda. I mean, I feel like we were like freshmen and he like had like 12 different headshots and like, you know, knew everything about the business and was, I mean, like, and the other kids I knew were more along those lines.
Yeah, I had a headshot and I remember having an agent briefly in San Francisco, but again, it was like, I knew I needed things, mm-hmm. like certain things, but I didn't really know how to get them or like, I didn't know the process. So essentially, like, usually like an agent would come to me and be like, hey, you interested? And I'd be like, yeah, okay. Like, I wasn't like shopping for anyone.
We talk about this
really
all the time.
Yeah.
There's like
know?
The two kinds of people, like the mm-hmm. ones that are like so hungry and thirsty and like hunting it down. And the ones that like are just like really good. And so people just like drag them into it. Mm-hmm. And
right,
I guess we
yeah.
know.
We love like Mary Testa. She was one of our guests and she, you know, she's someone else who had like this incredible talent, you know? And so it just kind of happened to her and she was like, okay,
I guess. She was like, Broadway, you know? Yuck. Oh, okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I never watched the Tony Awards or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, it was so foreign to me, mm-hmm. all of this. The first time I knew about the Tony Awards was when I was in Cats on Broadway.
Amazing.
And I was like, oh, what is this? You know, and I went and I watched from like the very balcony or whatever. And I was like, oh, interesting. I didn't really know. It wasn't what I ate it wasn't what I was eating and breathing and sleeping. Mm-hmm. I was much more interested, and this is kind of strange, I was much more interested in like TV film, sure. but not for the right reasons. You know, I grew up in the ballet world, and I knew everything about the ballet world you could possibly need to know in order to make it as a ballerina, except mm-hmm. I didn't have the passion for it. And I saw what it did to friends of mine as far as eating disorders and negativity yeah. and things like that. And it, even at the age of 12, it kind of pushed me away from that art form. But I was, you know, so as far as the ballet world, it was like I knew everything about that world because that's how I grew up. And but theater, you know, no way. But TV film, now I wanted to do commercials and like I wanted to be a star in TV mm-hmm. and film because I wanted to marry Jonathan Brandis, and I knew the only way I would be able to meet him was if I was a TV film star. Like, seriously, that was the reason why I had any kind of impetus to, like, get a headshot, do this, do that. It was never Broadway for me as a kid because mm-hmm. I didn't, it was, it was just not on the radar. You know, if I had known more about it, it would have been, like, mm-hmm. oh, straight from one point to point A to point B, and maybe my career would be a lot different.
What about the rock and roll thing? Like, at that point, what was that to you?
When I was in high school, I had a band. We were called Gyration Nation.
Yes, please.
And we were, like, a 70s cover band.
Oh, wow.
But that was, like, my first, like, experience of being in a band, and mm-hmm. I loved it. And it was three singers, and we were all Filipino in the band, and, like, and, you know, like, three of the three singers in the band were all from Young Peoples. And
so what were some of the songs and bands you covered?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I know
I love the
Earth,
70s.
Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
I know, like, every word to every song and, like, all of his riffs. I love Earth, Wind, and Fire. And, like, God, I should have just done Earth, Wind, and Fire. But anyway, we would do that and, like, well, I talk about it, talk about it, talk about
oh, yeah.
it, talk mm-hmm. about it. Do, 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 do. You know, we do those kind of songs. Mm-hmm. Donna Summer, no, tons of Donna
yes.
Summer.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. coming out of high school and into kind of the real world, I was very heavily immersed in disco, like Donna mm-hmm. Summer and that kind of stuff. But I had grown up with rock and roll. My parents listened to a lot of rock and roll. They told me about their stories of Janis Joplin, knowing Janis Joplin, meeting Janis Joplin.
Wow.
And then my dad said he saw Hendrix perform. He was front row. His feet were on the stage. And he said it was just amazing to watch someone play an instrument where it looked like the instrument was made out of liquid because of the way he was able to play it. And he's like, I've never seen anything like that before, you know, or since. And so my parents, they had a lot of that old school, you know, Beatles, of course,
sure.
playing on in the house along with the classical music constant.
Mm-hmm.
So it was either classical music or rock and roll or super weird, like, experimental synthy
yeah.
weirdness mm-hmm, happening mm-hmm. And that was kind of the music I listened to, and then it got into musical theater and and disco.
I'm obsessed, and then, I love disco so much.
I do too. Mm-hmm. I would love to do a disco album.
You,
honestly,
you
it would be
should.
So much fun. Not so, a cover album, but like original disco.
The world
fabulous.
Is waiting, Lena. We all need that right now.
I
feel like disco's really having a moment right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not a songwriter. I'm like someone who can take a song that someone has written
mm-hmm.
and then help it adjust a little bit just mm-hmm, to make it a little mm-hmm.
yeah.
more punchy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not someone who can just like make up any music. But I mean, I do, I'm not giving myself enough credit, obviously. I make up songs all the time. They're just really horrible and funny and usually like not something that you would, you know, it's like about a dog friend being my best friend, you know, or making breakfast, you know. It's just like
maybe you just need a collaborator.
I do.
yeah.
Well, that's what I need. I need someone who can present me something, and then like I can collaborate with them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure there are so many like brilliant musicians that would like kill to work with you.
Totally.
Here's hoping.
I mean, you have such an incredible voice. I mean, I remember when we did that Patti LuPone tribute at St. John the Divine.
Ugh,
and I'll never forget watching her face watch you as you sang
Don't Cry for Me.
I couldn't remember which came first. If it was,
it was Don't Cry for Me into Rainbow High.
Oh my God! Just both the big numbers.
It was so exciting because I wish we had a recording of that. Oh, you were there.
I was there, but I don't know if I actually saw it because I was backstage, like getting everyone ready or something.
Oh, I mean, you sang Rainbow High like the way like Axl Rose would sing it.
Yes,
it was
exactly.
Thrilling.
Which is how I would play Evita.
But no, I mean the fact that you could go for those like big Broadway belting high notes in this just like. Really rock voice. I mean, it was not like placement. I mean, I don't know what your tricks of the trade are, like behind the scenes, but it sounded like you were just shredding for the gods.
Yes,
you know?
Totally.
You know, that's the trick. It's like people are always like, how do you do that without hurting your voice? I'm like, well, you know, it is all about placement, but it takes a long, it takes a long time to get to the point where you're just calling on it like it's nothing. Mm-hmm, like, how long did you have to work on your mix? You had to work on it for a long time before it became something that was strong enough to, like, call on.
First of
all,
I never mix, so fuck you. But a lot of people struggle to even do that. I mean, is that something you figured out yourself, or did you have a great voice teacher?
I figured it out myself. So I was in a band called The Deafening.
Perfect.
We were called Cocaine the Band, and we were, like, this joke 80s band first. All the guys wore like Miami Vice white suits Amazing. And had mullets, and I looked like kind of a cross between Cyndi Lauper and I don't know. It was a bunch of different Dale Bozzio of Missing Persons. Do you guys know Missing Persons?
Uh-uh.
I took strong like heavily from her look, and they would their inspiration. They were not trained. They were not like professionally trained musicians at all. Right, I was the only professional musician that came into this thing. And they were always complaining, you know, that my voice was too clean, it was too, you know, theater, whatever. And so they would send me, like, they'd be like, we want you to sound like this. And then they'd send me, like, Lemmy from Motorhead singing. And I don't know if you guys know Motorhead, but it's just like, rah, 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 you know, like, I'm like, I can't sound like a man, you know, like, how do I do that? And of course, Axl, and then Bon Scott from AC/DC, and they sent me all these examples of what they wanted me to sound like, and I was like, oh, you mean like Janis Joplin, right? Mm-hmm. And so over time, I just got so sick and tired of them complaining to me, so I really just tried to find a place in my voice where it wasn't in my throat, and it was all somewhere else where I could pull that raspy sound out. And have it last a 45-minute set with really absurdly high songs, too, because they were also ones that wrote in open keys, and they didn't want to change the key because they were like, it's not rock and roll if we have to play bar chords, right?
Is that just laziness, or is that valid?
I don't know. But everything was, you know, if you listen to AC/DC, all their songs are pretty much in, like, A or something. They're all open chords because they're, like, power, right? And that's what they wanted. They wanted something like that, or Kiss, or, you know, or Guns N' Roses.
And what era of your career was this that you were doing that?
This is during Tarzan.
So, like...
This is right before Legally Blonde. So during Legally Blonde, I had my band... We were called Cocaine the Band.
So you're literally just like belting all day, every day. Just like singing, singing.
Exactly. I mean, we
those
rehearsed
shows
all
both
the time.
Take a lot of belting
and
as well.
No voice lessons other than them criticizing you and sending you tracks to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. And it's like, all right, well, I'm. And then also, I had voice lessons, but it was all for theater.
Right.
And I only had voice lessons for a short amount of time. I went to someone named Neil Seymour, and he was awesome. But they sent me, so I was in Tarzan, right? And I was cover for Jane. And I could not sing it.
That's a high part.
Well, I couldn't sing it. I was sick. And we were rehearsing in this huge warehouse where they were doing all the jumpy stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were doing construction at the same time. And the construction was causing... I had tonsils at the time. They were causing my tonsils to be so swollen and, like, irritated that, like, I didn't realize how much of a problem that was. And then one day there was this balloon kind of hanging off of my tonsil that was full of blood.
Ugh.
And I looked at it, and I went to Shuler Hensley, of all people, and I was like, hey, does this look weird to you? I opened my mouth, and he was like, oh, my God. And he, like, took me to Tom Schumacher.
The head of Disney Theatricals.
Yeah, yeah. He was like, Tom, look at this.
Not the stage manager.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, Tom, you got to look at this. And Tom looked, and they were both just like, oh, you're going to Dr. Korovin. And I had never been to a again.
The
like,
one who arguably killed Joan Rivers, but also the Broadway savior.
She's amazing. Everyone loves her.
Yeah.
But like, I again, this is me not knowing that I could go to a vocal doctor and not an ENT.
Yeah.
You know, it's all kinds of stuff that when you don't know, I mean, you
don't know.
You don't know. You don't know how to get the information. And of course, this is before all of our social media is happening. This is like right at the beginning of it. I mean, MySpace was still a thing.
Yeah.
And like, and so I went to Gwen Corvin and she was like, you're a singer and you have these tonsils in your mouth. And I was like, yeah. And so she's like, we're taking them out. So I ended up getting my tonsils removed. It was after, let's see, we had opened in like April, and then they didn't want me to take any time off until after the Tony Awards because they thought they were going to be nominated. And so I waited until I think the middle of June, and then I got my tonsils out, and I had took a 6-week break. And after that 6-week break, I had to learn how to sing all over again because my tonsils were so big my whole life. They'd been touching in the back of my throat. So without all of that tension, I didn't really know where my voice was coming from. So when my tonsils came out, all this range up here, I had never known.
Wow.
I'd never felt this mask, right? That's right, your nose in that placement. Never knew it, never had known that even existed because everything always came from here down. And all because of this tension, right? And then, again, everything was always tense too because of the bees. And it was like, my voice was huge too because I didn't have these cotton balls basically soaking up the sound as it was, you know, all these things. And so I took some lessons to kind of get back into the rhythm of the show, but then I joined this rock band like pretty much right after. And it was this new place that I found that I started just messing around with. And I think cause I'm an ex-dancer and I can feel my body, like I know when something is bad for me and causing problems, and I'm grateful that I have that awareness in my body. So I was able to really play around to find what felt like it was sustainable and what felt like it was doing damage.
Wow.
And through that and having this band challenging me basically, that is what developed this voice.
So what would you say, like, I mean, I didn't get to see you in rooms, but like, would you say it was that, I can imagine that score, like, when did you get to start kind of using that in your theater stuff?
Yeah, during rooms and also when I did Toxic Avenger.
Right.
Yeah, that was all like kind of the beginning. So that was the beginning of this rock infusion into the world, and also my focus then began. So remember how I was saying I kind of was just going where the wind blew me for the longest time, and I was, because I didn't really know what it was I wanted out of this world.
But you kept working.
But I kept working. I knew I wanted to be a lead, but that doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? It's like you can. It's like saying you want to be famous, but you have to understand what it is going to get you there, and what brings you joy, and what's, you know, it may deliver, it may not, but there has to be some kind of focus in your career. And so that was the first time I was like, ah, I want to do rock. Like, I want to do rock shows. I want to do specific shows that speak to me and my, this kind of love for rock music that has been reignited. And that's when I did at ART, I did Prometheus Bound. That was when all the Kinky Boots stuff started to happen. And it was just like, and there was also this Romeo and Juliet that they did with the, oh my God, Jeff Buckley music.
Oh, I know about that.
Damon Dano did it. He was Romeo. Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, from Oklahoma. Oh, he's so great.
I love Jeff Buckley. I would kill to hear that.
It was beautiful. I don't know really what happened with the production, but it was taking the...
Was that at ART also?
No, that was at Williamstown. But all these jobs, I was able to go, okay, I want that. You know, I want to do that. And while I'm now, right now, I'm a little part in it, it's something that's going to clearly tell people now what my focus is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like just readjusting the focus of my career. And that's kind of how it all led to Hedwig.
So when you saw Hedwig coming up, did you have a sense of like, this is really like right in my wheelhouse and would be the right step on my path to sort of make that kind of impact?
Yeah, I mean, I knew of Hedwig. I saw it when in 99 when I first moved here.
Yeah, sure, at the Jane Street
Theater. I got
a
free ticket. It was someone's last show. My sister was in town, so we went together. And it was the first time I had ever seen a show that, like, just impacted me in that way. But also, the music was undeniably something that was... I connected with, you know, I was like, oh, like I didn't know this could exist in the world. All I knew of a rock musical was Rent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Footloose.
Totally. Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Or Hair. And right. I was like, I mean, they're fine. They're great. And I was a huge Rent head.
Right.
Fan. I dated a lot of the guys. But like, do you know what I mean? Like they were like rock stars to me. Yeah, I was totally. Like, oh my God.
I thought Anthony Rapp was, I mean, that's what I where I was coming from.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
Or when Footloose, like, I was like,
I know, I'm not,
so
we're not, I'm not with you on that one. But, anyway, but Rent and Hair.
But at the time, yeah. You know, and then to see a piece of theater like that with no saccharin in it.
Yeah,
for sure.
Who did you see?
I saw Kevin Calhoun.
I saw him too.
God, and he was beautiful.
Hilarious.
And he's so good. And I just remember being really moved by that piece. And so when I saw it coming to Broadway, I was like, must. I must be seen for this. I do not care if I have to go to an open call. I am not beyond it. They have to see, I have to be seen for this. And it's like, I don't know. Because I knew the show, because I knew the movie, because I knew the music so well, because I had listened to that off-Broadway cast recording a million times.
Yeah, totally.
I had ideas to bring to the room.
Yes.
And when they challenged me to bring something new to them for the audition, I actually kind of knew the tone and I knew what to bring. So... and I also credit my boyfriend at the time, who was the guitarist in my band. I also credit him for actually pushing me to get it done. Because we wouldn't have filmed this whole video. Like, I wouldn't have done this whole, like, Kickstarter campaign.
What? I don't
to
know
bring
about
rent.
That.
You don't know about that?
No.
Oh, my God. I wrote a whole monologue that was just an intro to a Kickstarter campaign video to bring Rent back to Broadway so I could star as Angel in Rent.
Oh, my God. That is
I love
so cool.
It.
Because they asked us to tell a joke in character. And also what they did was John asked us to come into the room as the character, not as yourself coming into audition. He was like, you want to come into the room. I want you to be Itzhak in the room.
So
and I was
in
like,
full drag.
Well, I was like, well, why is Itzhak going into this room? It can't be to audition for Hedwig. Mm-hmm. What is it for? And I was like, it's because he's approaching these people to get money for
like
a Kickstarter
pitch.
Campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah, pitch. And that was the whole...
And you were dressed as him.
Yeah.
I love
with
it.
Really long eyelashes because I was doing Kinky Boots at the time and I was super into those little eyelashes.
I live for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did they cast you right in the room or were there callbacks?
Like? No, it was a bunch of callbacks. My final callback was that, you know, come in, don't drop character, be the character, tell us a joke. The joke turned into this monologue with the video. The video is on my YouTube channel, by the way.
Oh, I'm about watching that today.
Yeah.
No day about today. I mean, you were so just like scathingly brilliant in that. I mean, actually, because it's Hedwig and it's so much, obviously, more rock and roll than Evita. It was only when I then saw you do the Evita thing that I was able to look back and go, oh, yeah, duh, I should have known that's how she could do that. But, I mean, it was new ground. I mean, and I saw the original production 10 times and, you know, all the Hedwigs and all the Yitzhaks and, you know, Lisa Datz. I mean, everybody. And it was still just a new and amazing. And, you know, it was so it earned that mantle of, like, the Broadway version, you know.
Yeah.
And I was so excited when I heard that you were going to be doing some nights on the tour as Hedwig. And I so badly wanted to go see you. And I was never able to get there when I was even remotely near.
Yeah.
So I was so excited when you started your series of albums, mm-hmm. of obsessed with these different albums, and that and the Hedwig one. I mean, I play that so much. I mean, those are such incredibly great versions of all those songs.
Ah, thank you. I rose from off of the doctor's slab, like Lazarus from the pit. Now everyone wanna take a stab and decorate me with blood, graffiti, and spit. Enemies and adversaries, they try and tear me down. You want me, baby, I dare you. Try and tear me down. Ooh, ooh.
I mean, it's That's awesome. Really... It's, I mean, I saw Ally Sheedy when she did it, and, you know, and I remember thinking it's such a shame because people are walking out of here going like, oh, a woman can't do this part.
Right.
And it was, like, so not the case. She mm-hmm. just wasn't a singer, and so that ruined it because it's a really hard part to sing, you know, mm-hmm. it's about a singer. But, so I was so gratified to, like, just, I can only imagine how amazing you must have been playing the part, because even just singing the songs out of context on these, like, kind of stripped down arrangements, it's perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. So how was that to be break that ground in that role?
It was very interesting. I mean, you know, I had the love of all the Headheads. I mean, I just had them on my side, like,
friendship is magic.
Me on. Yeah. And,
by the way, it just... I looked that up too because I never knew.
No!
I didn't know why you said that at the Tonys. I thought you were just like this, like, just like kook.
Well, I am.
You are. It makes sense. I loved it. But then I found out that you were the voice of the, Countess Coloratura,
yes,
on
Rara.
My Little Pony, uh-huh. living for that. And that was the name of the was it a TV show?
My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic.
I love.
Because the shout out on the show, I didn't do that yet. I was just a fan of the show. And then they wrote that episode for me.
Oh, wait. This is even crazier. Yeah. You were just a fan of My Little Pony. And
Correct.
So you said the name of it. I mean, in your limited time.
In my limited time, yeah. My poor publicist at the time, Lisa, God bless her soul. She was like, do not mention My Little Pony. Please do not mention. Because I was so freaking out about it. The series finale, the season finale of like 4, had aired right when I did this Vanity Fair shoot. And mm-hmm. I was talking to the reporter about My Little Pony and that end, and I was like, there were rainbows and like friendship, and they like defeated this big thing with their friendship, and like it was crazy, and it made
God.
It into the article. And then my publicist was like, please don't mention, people think you're gonna be crazy. And I was like, well, it is an important part of my life, you know. Mm-hmm.
I loved
at
it
at the time,
even not knowing what it was about. It stuck out for me for years and years.
It was extremely important to me. So I just snuck the tagline because I figured it's not
Couldn't
bad.
Hurt.
It could be something totally
You got
weird.
The job. I mean, they wrote you an episode. That's amazing. Episode.
Talk about manifesting what you want, you know, focusing your path.
Okay, I derailed you from this
story.
No,
I know, but should have been like, Porsche, I love you.
Maybe now I can get that Porsche I've always wanted.
What was the story?
Okay, so you were
tangent.
Shattering the glass ceiling for women in Hedwig.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
As Hedwig.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting journey because I knew the show so well from sitting and actively listening to it every single day for 8 shows a week, 7 shows a week on Broadway. And not only that, I got the extra boost of seeing each person's version.
Yes.
So what's interesting about that is when you sit on stage and you watch these people, 8, you know, 7 shows a week, and you watch their different take and how it, you know, develops mm-hmm. over time, different things will jump out at you. The way they say a line will be like, oh, that makes sense to me now, or that means something completely different. And so I was able to take a mashup of everybody that I had ever been on stage with.
And so that was Neil and Andrew
Neil,
Rannells.
Andrew Rannells, Michael C. Hall, John himself,
yes.
and Darren Criss.
Yeah.
I was able to take all of them and like kind of use that to my advantage, mm-hmm. Take the things that they had really told me, not actually told me, but just told me through their performances about the character itself. And then, on top of all that, I had Yitzhak's whole backstory. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I had such a deep understanding of this secondary character from being having played in his shoes for so long. So it was almost like Yitzhak gets his day, mm-hmm. you know, like... and at the end of the my dress rehearsal in San Francisco, I know why, and it felt so right and very empowering, was that at the end of the show, I took off my bindings, you know, and I was just completely just, I wanted to take everything off and be just completely my born self in mm-hmm. front of the audience to show the power of just deciding mm-hmm. in that moment, mm-hmm. like, I am reborn as this. This yeah. is who I am now. Mm-hmm. And I finally found that, you know, to take it all off. But
did you want
to
keep that then going forward in the show?
I did, yeah, and I did.
Oh, you did?
I did, yeah.
Wow, I didn't
always
know that.
Just ripped that binding off. Amazing. Because it was the last thing. Because
at that point
was
you were just in like the black mm-hmm. boy shorts and then just and a binder. Like binding on your mm-hmm. on your chest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and that's so cool. I didn't know that. Oh, now I'm even more sad I didn't see it.
But it felt like so the story of Hedwig is just like it can be told by anyone, mm-hmm. really. No matter gender, no matter your sexuality, no matter what, it is a universal story to be told by anyone. And that's what's so interesting about it is that even though, you know, it's Hans is the young boy turned to woman, come back, reborn. Mm-hmm. We don't even know what the reborn is. It can yeah. be anything.
Right.
I think that, you know, anyone can tell this story because it is universal about being someone born one way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
losing yourself because of some desire outside of yourself, right? So the only reason he did all that was to get over the wall, mm-hmm. right? People forget he wasn't transgender.
Yeah.
He was actually trying to get the hell out of East Germany.
Yeah.
And did that. And so losing yourself because of some event and then being reborn into something that is new and yet melds all of it together mm-hmm. to something mm-hmm. brand new and that you're whole in yourself so that mm-hmm. you don't have to find anyone or anything to make you whole. You are in fact whole. So it's the whole journey of figuring out that he's the only person, you know, that he needs. He's mm-hmm. whole.
Yeah.
He, she, it, they, them, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever Hedwig means to you. And that was what was so important when I was playing it. That's what felt so important. I was like, yeah, anyone can do this. Anyone. I think it's just so cool.
Mm-hmm,
and it just, I don't know. You can't, when you step on that stage playing Hedwig, you lose yourself. So you don't remember what happens until you're like, I'm bowing now. This is so weird.
I love that.
Like, you know, you completely just let the story take you mm-hmm. over. You let yeah. the character take you over, and that's kind of how that all happens.
We had Kevin Adams on the podcast, who we love, and he was telling us about I guess it was when they were at Westbeth, like still like developing the show, and mm-hmm. now I can't remember what song it was that they had in place of Midnight Radio until they finally wrote Midnight uh-huh. Radio.
Yeah.
What did he say? It
was like, I don't remember.
It was some like rock anthem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was so weird because it didn't sum that up the way that, I mean, Midnight Radio is a little poetic and like obtuse anyway, but at least it speaks to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And this song was so random. Like, yeah, it was not that.
Yeah, Midnight Radio is so perfect.
So Hedwig is such a natural choice for you.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm going to text my husband super quick so he knows what we're doing because he's like waiting for me.
I love a husband that waits for direction.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're shattering more ceilings.
I have the best husband ever. He's very supportive. And
is he the Yitzhak to your Hedwig?
No, more than that. Yeah. It's not abusive. That's what you mean.
Well, I was listening to a lot of your Obsessed collections today. Yes. And you're talking about Hedwig. Do you love Bowie as well?
Love Bowie.
Because he has that very, like, you know, transformational aspect of his arc and career, you know, all the different personas he went through. And was he someone, or is he someone you turn to still for inspiration? Or
yeah, what he did, which was so cool, is he blurred the lines of gender so beautifully, you know. And it was something he did early on too. I don't know if you've seen, it's an album cover of him with long hair and a dress.
No.
Yeah. So he, like, way even in the beginning, he was playing like, gender roles, and to this day, I still think he is one of the very probably not the first, but to me, he's one of the first.
Yeah.
That blurred the lines so beautifully. He could be completely male, completely female, and completely androgynous.
Yeah.
Like whatever he wanted, and that is so inspiring for me because that's kind of what I lean towards. I know I have this kind of male side to me, this masculine side, but then I also have this very, very feminine side, and I'm kind of a chameleon when it comes to all of that.
I mean, it's so crazy because it's like you're this rock star with this huge rock voice, but you have a ballet background, which is very feminine and dainty.
I
love it.
Yeah, it's a bizarre dichotomy, but you know, it definitely shows in what I do, and I'm kind of starting to play with fashion now a little bit to kind of push the envelope a little bit,
like
more.
Designing stuff.
No, just what I'm wearing and I'm representing kind of on the red carpet. Because I didn't know. Again, it's this naivete. You go and you're just like, blah. But then suddenly you're like, all right, wait, I have a voice here and I can choose to do things that speak to me in a specific way. And when you do something that you are passionate about and that makes you feel something that inevitably will just connect with people, and in the end, like, that's why we do art. We want to feel something, but also we want to connect with someone, right? And at least that's what I think. And so for me, this is a whole new avenue I can go in and like be whoever I want to be, and that makes me feel something, strong or feminine or, you know, cool or what, you know, whatever, powerful or like, you know, and send a message or connect with people who are wanting to do the same.
And what did Guns N' Roses mean to you? I mean, we've talked about the album at all. When I listen to like Sweet Child of Mine, it takes me back to like seventh grade. I mean, I could cry. Like, you know, some of those songs, the ones that aren't like too like crunchy, you know, on the guitar and bass, like, you know, they have special meaning to me. But I also remember being like in eighth grade or whatever when what's it called, like One in a Million, is that the song that's like immigrants and faggots? Yeah. They make no sense to me. Yeah. And I just remember being like,
it's a different time.
Yeah,
it's a totally for sure. different time. Yeah. You know,
but what did that? You know, how did you identify with that? You know,
well, if you, I mean, I remember the. Do you remember the music video for Welcome to the Jungle?
No.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, he's sitting in like an electric chair, and he's like, he's got this like ripped up shirt and these like leather pants on, and his hair is like teased out and really long, and he. Axl is another person that toes the line of femininity,
yeah,
like 100%.
Yeah,
it is very drag, but it's very in the middle.
It's
right?
Guns and Roses.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. He's very in the middle, but also like that 80s kind of glam rock was at the time. Like men were wearing makeup and had really longer hair than the women did, and they looked more feminine than the women did.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's like, and women were going the opposite direction. They were getting the big shoulder pads. Yeah. And the, you know, so there was a gender switch happening in the 80s. It's interesting how things are They recycle themselves, yeah, so they come totally back. Everything is circular. Mm-hmm. Circular?
Cyclical.
Cyclical.
Circular.
Circular. Circular. Circular. thank you. But like, it's the songs, that mm-hmm. heavy guitar I've always been so drawn to. Mm-hmm. It's the two guitar sound, right? You have the one lead and the one playing rhythm, and his voice is like, he's got probably one of the biggest ranges, yeah. I think. I don't know what it is. You're on a computer. But Axl Rose has one of the biggest ranges of all time, I think, because he can go super low, mm-hmm. and then he can sing mm-hmm. in the stratosphere.
The wailing, those notes, crazy.
Who knew? But what's so interesting about this band and about this album is that they released a greatest hits album first. Mm. So Appetite for Destruction is basically Guns N' Roses' greatest hits.
I didn't know that. That's why it's such
it's
a
not.
Winner.
It's not. I mean, it's not. It's so just. Well received. It was their first. You couldn't get better than
hindsight.
That. Everything
yeah.
is just
yeah.
downhill.
Yeah.
It was such a perfect album.
What is your favorite track on the album?
Mr. Brownstone. You know, when I was first listening to, you don't clock the references. Right. You don't know what it's about, you know.
Yeah.
Now I know it's about drugs, and it was written by the other members in the band. And mm-hmm. it's really interesting when you look at the history of the band. Axl Rose was pretty straight and narrow. He had a lock on his door at the chateau that they trashed. His place was like completely perfect, and all the other rooms, the toilets were you know, broken, yeah. and there was like shit on the floor. Like,
yeah. like, oh my God.
Like, you want to talk about rock star lifestyle? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Guns N' Roses
epitome, right?
was the epitome, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they did crazy things. And Axl was like this shut in who had a lock on his door and made sure everything was perfect, and was very much like a organized, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm.
protecting a gift.
Yeah. yeah. Which is so bizarre, but that's how I felt in my band. I was like the one.
Oh, okay.
I was like the one who, you know, was doing all the business end of everything.
Yeah.
They were the creative. They wrote all the songs. They wanted to just be rock stars. They wanted to live that rock star mm-hmm. lifestyle. And I was like, and I couldn't do it. You know, I mm-hmm. couldn't just be the responsible one all the time. Which is why I'm not with that band anymore, which sucks because mm-hmm. I really think that the songwriters in The Deafening were, so good.
Are they still going on without you?
No.
Get the band back together.
I was the glue. Mm-hmm. I was the glue mm-hmm. at that point, and everybody's moved out of, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. the drummers in Chicago, mm-hmm. the bass players in Maine, you know. And so, unfortunately, it's like, it's not going to happen. I mean, I wish I could convince the writer to let me take the songs and use them, because they're beyond, they're just not, there's this like type of writing that is taught mm-hmm. or that's kind of like, I'm going to write this song and mm-hmm. it's going to go do, 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 do.
Like,
and I'm
going to fall.
Yeah. Formulaic. Yeah. Thank you. And then there's another type of writing that comes from.
Yeah.
Who knows where. Mm-hmm. It is something that just comes down and just happens.
Yeah. Mm.
And this guy was that. And it is too bad. It, like, to me, it's very sad that.
Is any of it out there?
I have a ton of little recordings that we did together, but nothing is.
Not like online, though.
Mm-hmm. No, but all the Deafening stuff. Mm-hmm. All of the Deafening stuff he wrote and with his brother.
What are the tracks you would point us toward of the Deafening?
Of the Deafening?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Shakedown Chinatown. I drank a bottle of whiskey, got the shakedown Chinatown. Man, what was I thinking? Got the shakedown Chinatown. Pulled down in the street, next thing that threw me in a car. also, okay, so The Deafening was very much in line with Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Completely. Mm-hmm. So the album we released, which was called Central Booking.
Amazing. Which I love. Great. One and, name after the other.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It feels to me more like Appetite for Destruction than anything, mm-hmm. you know? We didn't have all of that great production. Mm-hmm. You know, we basically recorded this in a basement.
Yeah.
And, but it has a raw kind of feeling to it. Mm-hmm. And my favorite tracks, I think, would be Shakedown Chinatown and Death Rattle and Roll. Making fast cash, playing blue guitar stack. Call out the priest, Death Rattle and Roll. Banging ugly chicks in the back of a bus, man. Call out the priest, Death Rattle and Roll. A million guitars like fucking dynamite. Call out the priest, Death Rattle and Roll. Going down in flames to rock and roll all night. Call out the priest, Death Rattle and Roll.
And there, that.
We did a couple of music videos, and they were all... I produced them, and we did all our own, like, I edited them while backstage at Kinky Boots waiting to go on stage.
Everything.
I edited the videos because, Nicola is never on stage, so I was like, well, I might as well just edit these videos.
And you did it, like, on, like, an iMovie, like, yeah. Amazing. I love it.
So yeah, I mean, you'll hear a lot of inspiration from Guns N' Roses. I know we haven't had a ton of time to talk about Appetite for Destruction, but it's definitely an album that you should listen to top to bottom. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those most perfect albums. Even if it's not your taste in music, try and force yourself to listen to music that you don't always listen to.
Yeah.
For me, it's like country. Like, I'm not a country kind of girl, but my husband loves country. So I like to sit back and listen to what he chooses as the country that he loves. Mm-hmm. You know, and after a while, I'm like, I get it, you know, it's very interesting.
When there's a time, for me, it's like my music interests are so dependent on where I am. So, like, yesterday and today, I was listening to the Guns N' Roses album as I was, like, you know, on the subway and, like, walking down the street. And, like, that energy just really is, even though it's not
pumped.
My favorite type of music, you know, it really does, you know?
You need it for this city.
It'll get you pumped up.
Yes.
Yeah, ready to destroy, which is great.
In our final moments, we have a game that we play with all of our guests.
Okay.
Like Marry, Fuck, Kill, but it's Dolly Concert Kill. Mm-hmm. So we give you three Dolly performers, and you choose one to see as Dolly Levi in Hello Dolly, and one
switching
to
gears.
See in concert, and one to kill.
Appetite for Destruction.
I feel like with Lena, we have to do men. But I was thinking like John Karen Mitchell and like
sure,
Axl Rose,
great.
You know,
yeah.
And then maybe
Bowie.
Yeah. Great. John Karen Mitchell, David Bowie, and Axl Rose. Dolly Concert Kill.
Dolly. Well, John as Dolly.
I mean.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. Lovely.
Would be amazing. I'd also kind of like to see John Karen Mitchell play Auntie Mame.
Oh, yeah. He'd be a great Mame.
Would that be
totally.
Like something that would be kind of fun to gender swap?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, they can't figure out how to do it anyway, so
it
might as well take a
something
stab.
Something new, yeah.
That would be amazing.
I love it.
John, I love you.
Well, then
you can be Vera.
You can be,
yeah.
No, she's, she can be grown up Patrick. She's
yeah.
too
Patrick, that's true.
She's too young to be Vera with John.
Very true.
Concert, Bowie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kill. I'm sorry
Axl
Rose, but I have to kill you.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, he'll love it. It's in keeping.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lena, for being here with us.
We could do 12 more volumes with you. There's so much to discuss.
Go and check out all Lena's albums and Spotify or iTunes, Amazon.
Yeah.
The Obsessed series is up there. My live album is up there. I have another live album that's just like been sitting in my pocket. I haven't released it.
Mm.
Where was that one recorded?
That one was when I did the Villa Satori, which is about my childhood show at Studio 54 or Below 54.
54 Below.
54 Below.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Boop. Haven't talked about things in a long time.
Yeah.
I have that in my back pocket. I just never released it. And I have a recording of The Reading Rainbow theme song.
Oh, yeah. Now you're speaking my language.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Take a look.
Yeah. Honey. Also, right. Metallica song. Hello. But yeah, so there's all the Obsessed stuff on Spotify, and then there's also my band stuff.
The Deafening.
The Deafening should be on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And if you're so inclined, listen to Appetite for Destruction, and then listen to our Sorry recordings. But, you know, listen to... Central Booking by The Deafening.
That's right. And Death Rattle and Roll.
Death Rattle and Roll. There's a video for that.
I'm all over it. And we're going to watch your Yitzhak.
My Yitzhak video.
Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Red production video.
Do it.
Amazing. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Ben Rimmelauer's Broken Records on Broadway World. For more episodes, visit Broadway World, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts do be.
Come back next week for our chat with Happy Birthday Doug's author and star, viral video sensation Drew Drogi, coming in to talk about Sylvester's album All I Need.
Other upcoming guests include two-time Tony nominee Allison Fraser, stage and screen icon Nathan Lee Graham, and Johnny Carson's favorite singer, the marvelous Marilyn May.
This episode was edited by me, Daniel Nolan.
Thanks to Emmy-winning composer and lyricist Lance Horn for the Broken Records theme song.
Follow us both, Ben Rimmelauer and Daniel Nolan, on all y'all's socials.
That's Ben Rimmelauer, BenRimmelauer.
And that's Nolan with an E, not Nolan with an A.
Because Nolan with an A is an ass.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.